glad you're visiting, because it's really nice to have somebody around who doesn't know my tricks.
Well, I think I know a couple of tricks.
Well, here's... This is not a trick. This is just a very serious thing. Come over here and put your eye on this.
No, thank you.
Oh. Well, but, here, open up this present box.
No, thank you, and look at this.
Ow! Aw, man!
She's a smart kid, huh, Rashi?
She's definitely related to Mom.
Hi, welcome to Radio Rashi. I'm Paul Dini.
I'm Misty Lee.
And I am Calla Ann.
Yes, Calla Ann is visiting us all the way from Detroit for the summer. So she'll be at least on this, maybe a couple of other podcasts.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we have Mr. Ezra with us today.
Hello,
Ezra.
And welcome everyone.
And of course, we have Rashi running around.
Yes, and Deuce and Muggsy are here, and Super Again Rashi, and a bunch of contractors.
And a bunch of and
it's hard to keep track of everyone right now, actually.
Well, it's
so
it
much
is.
Activity.
You know, I saw Hobart running around back also, and it's been kind of hard keeping track of him since the contractor showed up.
Yeah, you know, I want to ask you about that, too, because I've noticed that his bone pile is growing exponentially.
I know, and there's all these leftover tool bags and everything.
Yeah, what's going on with that? Are they just sloppy, or are they...
I don't know. I didn't think...
Well, if you see a Makita hanging around, I love one.
Okay. I'll keep an eye out for it. I mean, I don't know why they just keep abandoning the job. It's really unfortunate.
I don't know. I didn't think that the thylacines were particularly predatory toward human beings, but I don't know. We may have lucked out with this one particular one. So
lucked out with this particular. You think he's eating the contractors?
I don't know. Maybe just the electricians, because we've had like 3 electricians in the last few days.
Wow.
But Hobart, what's going on here? I don't like the sound of that growl.
No, what's on his mouth?
It looks like, I don't know. I think it's strawberry jam. I hope it's strawberry jam.
Is that denim hanging out of his mouth?
Well, I don't know. He's wearing like a little kerchief around his neck, too.
Oh.
Yeah, he hasn't had a bath kerchief lately, so he wouldn't have gotten a kerchief from
No, and where'd he learn to tie a knot? He has no opposable thumbs.
No. Okay. Well,
I think we're going to have
Rashi,
to look into
this. Rashi, you want to take Hobart out back and tie him up in the stable?
Yeah, is that electrician still out there? I think he's hungry.
Just take him out and tie him up in what's left of the stable. That's why we're having the work done. Rashi blew up half the house last week.
Oh, my goodness.
Do what I can.
we were dodging debris. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was insane.
We had the 4th of July last week, or as Rashi called it, the M80-thon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he spray-painted his name on a wall a couple years ago, and since we were okay with that, he felt that that meant that it was his territory.
Yeah.
And so now he just decides that there are random holidays, and then does what Rashi will do, and unfortunately it's far enough in the backyard where we kind of can't see what's going on until it's too late, and there's smoke coming out of the stables.
Mm. Rashi has it in his head that every holiday is either the 4th of July or Guy Fawkes Day.
What was the second thing?
Guy Fawkes Day. That's
Guy Fawkes Day?
A British holiday.
Remember the 5th of November?
It's a
what?
Guy Fawkes was going to blow up Parliament.
The V for Vendetta.
V for Vendetta.
I am not familiar with this.
Oh.
I've
so they
never
celebrate Guy
the
Fawkes by blowing up fireworks in England. And so they celebrate it every year. They burn the guy, which is like a dummy of Guy Fawkes. At least I think they do. I'm remembering what little shreds I remember from reading Paddington Bear when I was a kid, and he was celebrating Guy Fawkes Day. And my comprehension of it is probably less than Paddington's was. So.
History in the U.S. isn't really our strong suit, and knowing other people's isn't that much better.
Yeah, we're worse with that.
Well, Rashi thinks Boxing Day is a day you go around and slug people after Christmas.
Yeah, well, Rashi is also the one who told me that Turkey and Hungary combined to make a country called Full.
That's great.
That isn't even geographically possible, because there's so much stuff between them, it's ridiculous.
Nice.
Well, Callie, Rashi's been giving you some grief this week, hasn't he?
Yes, he has.
Well, I've been teaching Kella the ropes with voiceover. She's very comfortable on the microphone this week. Every time I get an audition, I spin it over to her and let her read it too. She's pretty good at it. I'm actually thinking about sending some to Atlas, my agency.
That's a
good idea. Not that they would sign her, you know.
Yeah. We should get her into broadcasting. Maybe send her to my old alma mater, Emerson College.
Yeah.
In Boston,
there you go.
Which is number one as far as broadcasting and radio and TV. I mean, it was big in radio back in the 70s and 80s, and then, you know, there have been about 12 upheavals in entertainment since then, so they're probably on the
cusp. But I will tell you that it's some of these voice actors. Now, I go to a lot of casting workshops and stuff because I'm new in voiceover and don't know anybody. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to all these places and meeting the person who casts at Nickelodeon and who casts here and who casts there, because it's important. You know, you get in front of them and it's a good opportunity. Mm-hmm. But at these casting network workshops, I bump into some Emerson kids.
Yeah.
And every single time without fail, they are talented and all over it. And they are really good, very aware of the industry, very good at keeping up on contacts, and forces to be reckoned with. So even though the media has changed over, I think Emerson, and I don't go there, but just talking to these kids and seeing them in action, as opposed to just hearing them speak because I'm watching what they're doing, they know what they're doing. So Emerson has changed with the times.
Emerson, yeah. At least
that would be my guess.
It does. I mean, I was in voice and elocution class early on in my freshman year there. And one of the things they taught you how to do is to do that switch from regular voice to radio voice. Mm-hmm. I don't think I do it as well as I used to, but it would be like I'm sitting here rattling on in my, you know, mid-California type accent, and then I suddenly switch it up and go to AM radio. Like this, you know, you can develop that resonance to it. Although I think when I do it, I sound a little muppety.
It's a little caricature.
It's a little caricatured, but then again, that's what it is. They take you into caricature, and then they have you pull it back.
Just have you talk normally, and then suddenly you're Gary Owens.
Gary Owens.
You
put your,
oh,
your,
yeah,
your
the
hand,
hand
up
to yeah,
your
yeah,
ear.
You got to do the so you radio
can,
announcer.
So you can still hear that. That's that old radio announcer.
It's 6:55 a.m. in Fresno, and it's time for the crop report.
Is it really?
I don't know. I assume
they have crops in Fresno?
Well, yeah, they grow. I don't know what they grow there.
You really did go to school a long time ago.
Yeah, I did. Well, all Central California is agricultural, so they grow stuff there. I think you grow raisins in Fresno or something like that.
You don't grow raisins; you grow grapes.
I know. No, but
there's no such thing as a raisin plant.
No, I know, but they
that's
they
when
are,
you stop
they,
growing grapes is they, when they become raisins.
But I think they have raisin processing plants. I mean, you know, for aged grapes in Fresno or something.
Aged and humiliated grapes.
That's right.
As June from Jenny and June would say.
I don't
like raisins. They're humiliated grapes.
Well, Central California, like in the Imperial Valley, it's all we apparently grow a lot of produce for the rest of the country, and so we harvest a lot of stuff there still. Mm-hmm. Not everything comes from China. Most of it does. But
so what's going on?
Just work.
Who's Amy?
Amy?
Your microphone says Amy. Is that your microphone's name?
Hi, Amy.
This is Amy.
Oh, that's strange. I left a tag on there somehow. Oh, Amy. I don't even remember what that's from.
Who's Amy?
I have no idea, actually.
Emily's going to want to know.
So you were auditioning today, and you
I was
were
auditioning. I've been auditioning all week like a mad woman.
Right.
And I'm really happy. I'm really excited about this one callback. They're being real sketchy about what the project is, which, as an actor, makes me super excited. Because when they're sketchy with the auditionees about what you're going to do, it's usually kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like the end product is like they don't want to tell you because they want you to do a good job. And then, you know.
And they're keeping it as low-key and secretive as possible.
Yeah. Or it's just a crappy project.
Well,
you just,
maybe,
you know, you really can't ever tell.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, you know, I'm happy to be called back for anything. That's the way I look at it, is I love auditioning.
Work is work.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, the auditioning is the work.
Yeah.
You know, because when you're in a session, like I've got a session on Monday from 2
Project
to 7.
Project X, which we can't announce, but probably can around Comic-Con.
Well, I can talk about the session. I just can't talk about who's going to be there and what we're doing.
Right.
But, you know, like I've got a session coming up on Monday, and I did a job this week for like a corporate kind of thing, commercial work. And, you know, tons of auditioning, but like I was saying, it's the auditioning is the job. If you don't enjoy auditioning, you can't do this.
Right.
Because that's how you spend most of your time. And then the actual recording sessions, it's kind of like, it's an easy day because you know exactly what you're doing and you're not trying to fit into someone else's standards. The director is there and it's play. But the auditioning is the work. And I just love it. God,
sometimes
love
you
job.
Run into an actor who says, well, I kind of, you either want me or they don't for the audition. You know, I kind of hold it back. I'll give them my A game when I actually get the part, and that is like dead
I've never
wrong.
Heard that before.
Well, those are from actors who don't work very well.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was just gonna say. You know, like I said, the auditioning is the work, and what a great opportunity to walk into a booth with 6 or 7 auditions in your hand and do something different for every single one of them and horse around with your voice and walk out of there, and that's your work for the day.
Like
that's
so
insane, and it's not easy. You know, but it sure is fun.
Yeah,
I started off acting when I was in college, and I really wanted to be an actor. But I
you're an excellent actor, which is why you're such a good writer.
No, thank you. But you know, I saw what other kids my age were going through, and the thing was like you had to like be like spawning salmon and swim to New York and try and make it there, or else out to Hollywood, which even seemed a bigger crapshoot. For some reason, New York seemed maybe because it was closer to Boston, and that seemed to be like the way, I don't know, I had it in my head. You go to New York and you do something, and then that gets you noticed, and then you go out to Hollywood, or if you've got an inn in Hollywood, you go out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I also didn't really know what I wanted to act, you know, to do. You know, mm-hmm. did I want to do comedy or drama or whatever? And I just realized that the more I went to auditions, the more I found myself reading dialogue I just didn't like, or auditioning for parts I thought were sort of stupid, and I thought, I can write better stuff than this.
And you do.
Yeah, and I fell out of love with acting real quick. I mean, yeah. I enjoy doing it now if somebody...
Yeah, but you do it on your terms with your own words.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a totally different story because, quite frequently you get a script, and I am very fortunate and have never had to work with a script that I thought was stupid. I am.
Wait.
I know. I'm really lucky that I've worked for really smart, excellent writers. That's a huge, huge bonus.
Yeah.
And it's something that I'm just shocked, but also as an actor, if they do put that script in front of you, it's your job to make those words look good and to come to life off the page. And that is where the creativity comes in. That's where all that improv training really, really kicks in.
Right.
And we were talking about auditioning a minute ago,
uh-huh.
and boy, have I had a doozy of an audition because we've got all these guys working on the house and I'm just trying to get this one audition out. It's like a promo thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, I can't even turn it in because we'll wait till you hear it. You want to play it later?
Let's put it on the end.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's hysterical. I actually sent it to Bob Bergen, who was one of my teachers, and I was like, this is why I take my auditions to Voice Tracks West, because this is what happens when I try to do them at home.
The great Bob.
Well, I'm just talking, Bob, and Bergen. Then you hear the drill. Oh, it's hysterical. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. But this is what happens around here because, like I said, auditioning is the job, and so I'll get 6 to 7 of them a day. Mm-hmm. And have to turn these things out in the booth, and it usually it takes a little while, but I have a booth here at the house,
right.
Or I'll go to Voice Tracks West where we used to do the podcasts.
That's right. That's right.
Before we got the lovely Ezra.
Oh,
and
thank you. I'm so pretty.
Yeah, we love having you.
Well, the other thing is it's hard for me to write. My office is directly mm-hmm. under where they're hammering and everything mm-hmm. like that, and. Mm-hmm. And it's like I have to. I put on my noise canceling
headphones.
Yeah, they go right
How's
here.
How's it going in here, Paul?
I can't smell a thing.
Right.
Are they still working upstairs?
Yeah. But I it was so loud recently that I put it on, and then I turned on the loudest record I have, which I think was Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops, Celebrate the 4th of July.
Oh, geez.
And it opens with Fanfare for the Common Man, that
there
Aaron Copland piece, bum, 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 ba na 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 na. And I could still hear him talking, and I just cranked it up louder, and then I started swearing. And Hobart was in there asleep, and he just ran out quickly. And then
and ate an electrician.
Yeah, it got a lot quieter. Once I start with the swear words, Hobart starts getting hungry.
Indeed.
And he's actually looking kind of hungry now. Oh, there he goes out back.
I think Tyler's out there. He better watch his back.
Oh, Tyler gets along with him well. Tyler knows how to keep his back to the wall.
Yeah.
And how to use a whip and a chair.
Exactly.
And a chair we keep out by the pool. Have we mentioned that we got a pool?
No, I don't think so. Hey, we got a pool.
We got a pool.
That is amazing.
Big one. We got a pool.
It's almost a TARDIS-sized pool. It looks so much bigger in the inside than it is on the out.
Yeah. It's a what size pool?
TARDIS-type pool. Like, the inside is, enormous. I saw so many people in there over the 4th of July.
Well, that explains the whiny little toff I see there with the bow tie and the long scarf. I'm trying to get to Gallifrey. You're not getting near my pool, pal. Try the phone book.
It's already big and blue, so yeah.
Down the street, yeah.
Yeah, it's really neat. I'm so glad we did it. Every time, we have this big joke. Paul teases me because he says, every time I go away, I come home and a room in the house has changed colors. And I think I said that on here before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he left this time and I tore down half the stable and put up a pool. And he was like, what happened out here? And he's like, you tore down half the stable. And I said, yeah, and I put up a pool. And he's like, all right, I think I like that. And he's just like,
pool, so.
Well, at least no rooms change colors.
Yeah.
You got to find solace where you can, pal. It's what you get for traveling.
It's an above-ground pool, and it's pretty nice.
It's much bigger than you'd think it would be.
Yeah. And it's not your typical, straight up and down above-ground pools that look like they're going to break in the middle and then just flood the yard. This looks really well-built, and it's really nice.
I know. It's really nice. It was really cheap, too. Mm-hmm. It was very inexpensive. It went up quick. We had it up.
Uh-huh.
We... Phew. Tyler did it. I did. But yeah, he had it up in like
in
30
a joint
minutes.
Effort of supervision and
yeah, it took longer to fill it than it did to put it together.
Wow.
Then again, that's where he's a Viking. I mean, he's an like assembly king. That, you know, Tyler's awesome. He does everything.
Yeah.
Wow. He does everything.
It's a yeah.
Man,
he's amazing.
He's great.
Good job. The pool. It's not
here. Put up this pool here. Edit this Photoshop picture here. You know, I mean, he's edit this audio
trades.
File
yeah.
here. Please, graphic art design this postcard. What? Where do you find somebody like that? He's insane. He's amazing. I don't,
the pool is not
why
quite
here.
The pool is not quite, you know, the Coral Casino in Santa Barbara where we
yes,
used to go.
Yes, it is.
But it's a step up, a few steps up.
Have I ever been to the Coral Casino? I want to go to the casino. You know, yesterday was 7/7/11, and I know we're dating the podcast by saying this. What? They're not live? Almost live. That's why they're called that. So
yeah.
But I was like, 7/7/11, why am I not playing craps right now?
Or why are we not getting Slurpees at the 7-Eleven?
Oh, Slurpee? Yeah. Do you remember when they did the Simpsons, the Slurpee Day at
that
the Simpsons?
That was great. It was just down the street, wasn't it?
Yeah, right up the street. They turned it into a...
That was awesome.
Our local 7-Eleven was turned into the Springfield Simpsons.
This young lady right here went and saw the Simpsons movie and had Matt Groening get on his knee and ask her specifically what she thought.
Woo!
Wow.
She saw the premiere on the lot.
Of
yes, she came
movie.
With us. Yeah, we were not invited,
very
but she went.
Impressive.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But she went, and he walked right up to her and said, "You tell me, what did you think?"
Wow.
Yeah, he wanted her opinion.
And what did you think?
Did you like the Simpsons movie?
I thought it was the awesomest thing I've ever seen.
You were loving
she
it.
She dug it.
Wow.
She really did dig
it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
definitely.
So
we
she
don't
was
say
honest.
Dug it anymore.
Yeah, and he said, well, what were your favorite parts? And I mean, he really picked her brain for a good
yeah,
while.
Yeah, because that's part of the target audience.
Yeah,
like the kids,
you
know, wanted, you know, gonna go see it. I loved it. That was great.
Yeah, and then the year after, because she had such a great experience, we went to Universal, and how many times did you ride the Simpsons ride?
At least 100.
Yeah, probably. I think all day long.
Or at least 1,000.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you weren't trying to get me wet on the Jurassic Park ride with London, she's got a friend that lives up the street from here in London, and they hang around, and they're like best friends, soulmates. It's crazy. It's really neat. You know, like my sister actually was out and was watching the two of them together and said, I don't know how two people that are so much alike find each other in the world. You know, like, I really don't know how that happens. And I'm like, well, it worked for Renee and me.
Yeah.
It works for Ruth and I. I mean, like, you just like attracts like. But the two of them, you know, they're trying to get me soaking wet, trying to get me to not wear a poncho
on
the Jurassic Park ride. But the problem is, if you don't wear a poncho on the Jurassic Park ride, you're a wash rag for the rest of the afternoon.
Oh, my goodness, that thing's so
Did I ever tell you about the first time I went on the Jurassic
Park? Drenchosaurus.
I should tell you the story about the first time I went on the Jurassic Park ride.
Tell her the story. I know the story, but yes, tell them at home. Hello, everybody at home. And then tell Calla, because it's ridiculous.
This goes way back.
This is connection.
Some years. But this goes way back to... when I was working on Tiny Toons and a bunch of shows at Warner Brothers that Steven Spielberg was involved with, like Freakazoid and a few others. And what happened was, it was through sort of fortuitous events, I got an invitation to go on the very first Jurassic Park ride. You know, like the ride is open, we'd like you to be our guests and come on the ride. And so it was myself and Sherry Stoner.
You will recognize as the voice of Slappy Squirrel and also
Slappy Squirrel.
And also the body model for the Little Mermaid.
That's right. And Belle.
How can Slappy Squirrel be the body model for Little Mermaid?
Have you ever seen how foxy Sherry Stoner is?
No, I haven't. That seems like a contradiction in terms there.
She is amazingly talented and stunningly beautiful.
Sherry is very petite, and she's an improv whiz. She was with the Groundlings for years, and she's got big wide eyes and is extremely expressive, so she was perfect for Ariel in all the parts, especially where she loses her voice and she has to communicate and you know, use her big eyes and smile and everything to express herself without her voice. And there were times like we would be in the writer's room together, or I'd be in her office writing, because we wrote a lot of the early Tiny Toons together, and she would get like a thoughtful look on her face, and it would just be it's Ariel. It's Ariel with brown hair.
Wow.
So anyway, we worked together for a while, and then somehow, then they were opening the Jurassic Park ride, and we got an invitation to go on it, and Colin Powell was there opening, no, was it Colin Powell? No, it was Schwarzkopf, I think, was there. That's the other.
Oh, wow. I love that you think they're interchangeable.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
that they're the same person. You're just like, oh, whatever. It was just some general.
Military guy.
Yeah, some military
dude. I think it was Schwarzkopf.
Had a bunch of ribbons and coins on his shirt.
Yes.
I don't know. Okay.
He's opening the ride with Steven Spielberg. And so they have
opening the ride, like cutting the ribbon?
The ribbon and going on the ride for Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. And so it was like a big fun day, you know, and they had like
it's
a
so
whole,
American
a
that,
whole
that
party.
An army general or, you know, whatever branch of the military would be there to open the Jurassic Park ride.
It was actually a really fun day. They had like a reptile, you know, like a reptile keeper there with like pythons and lizards, you know, so you could go up and play with them.
That's
like a little petting
next
zoo.
To you, pal.
Or you could dig for dinosaur bones and everything
like
that.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah. So everybody, you know, when they cut the ribbon, we all got in the cars and I'm riding in the same car with Sherry and, you know, Steven is up in a couple of cars ahead of us. And we start off going on the ride and I'm going like, we're the first people to get to see this.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea what the ride was, but I assumed it was going to involve, you know, tragedy of some sort. And you get into the ride and you go up to the top and the final thing is just right before you go over the waterfall, the T-Rex attacks you and then you go down.
And you launch.
And then you get gallon after gallon of water just drenched.
Unless you're
drenched.
In a poncho.
Yeah, well, and I got to attest that I was on it in that early stages of the ride. It got you more wet then than it does now.
Yes.
They had to hand out towels when I was on that ride.
Well, that's, yes. That,
now
that's
you
right.
can buy them. Isn't
yes,
that
yes.
insidious?
I love it that the boat stops at the gift store where for sale are towels.
Yep.
Yes. And they really get you.
And if you don't buy the poncho in the first 5 seconds of the ride.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, okay, now, just so you guys know at home, London has since joined us.
Yes.
And so I'm going to catch London up real quick on where we are. London, Paul was on the first ever Jurassic Park ride, and he wrote it with Steven Spielberg. So he's telling the story about that?
Yeah. Well, not quite, but, you know, what happened was Steven was like a boat or two ahead of us.
Okay.
So we get off, we swim off the ride.
Yeah.
We are in the boat is filled with water.
And you think the middle will save you, but it doesn't.
And Sherry is like this. She is an unhappy little mermaid.
She looks like a soaking slappy squirrel.
She is dripping water, you know, and she was going like, why didn't they tell us that was going to happen? So we get off the ride and standing there is Steven Spielberg, bone dry. And he goes, hey, did you like it?
He found the one seat. He's like, make sure there's one seat dry.
How did you get off? How did you not get wet? And he says, oh, well, you know what? I had a little press to do later, so there's a special stop up at the top. So they stopped my car and they let me get off, and so I didn't take the last.
Oh, that
did you
is
like
evil.
It? And yeah. I said, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And Sherry went, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And so she, for the rest of the day, Slappy. She was saying, I'm going to go home and I'm going to write a cartoon where Slappy Squirrel takes a hose and just keeps spraying Steven Spielberg.
You know who got really screwed that day? Were the people that were in the boat with Steven.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's like, oh, wait, let me off here.
Like,
have
wait,
fun,
why?
All y'all. Soaking.
Why are you getting off? Where are you going?
Yes, she did.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm sure he's gone on it plenty of times. He's the consummate good sport, so I'm sure he's gotten more than his share of drenchings on that ride. He's, you know, if he didn't have to do press that day, I'm sure he would have been out.
No, he wouldn't have.
Wringing out his shirt
You know what? Because he's Steven Spielberg, and if I were Steven Spielberg, I would never get wet on the Jurassic Park ride.
I
don't get wet on it now. You know why? Because
you don't go on it.
I don't cheat.
Yes, you do.
You don't go on it.
Buying a poncho is not cheating.
Yes,
I have to sit there in a poncho and look like a dork.
It's still
so
cheating.
I suffer for my dryness.
Oh,
well, you learned your lesson on the Splash Mountain ride.
Because
I didn't tell you what that ride was like. I said, it's cute. It's, you know, Brer Rabbit and Brer Fox, you know. So we went on the ride, and you had been taking pictures all day, and you had
overalls on.
You had overalls on, and you put the chip from the camera in your bib pocket, and then we get off the ride, dripping wet, of course.
And the chip from the camera had been replaced with a goldfish
because
I was soaking wet.
Oh,
and the
my
whole,
goodness.
You know, I was like, oh, I'm gonna put the chip in here
it's
and keep it dry.
Safe.
Yeah, guess what?
Mm.
Yeah, you know what my pocket was full of? Water.
Water.
Yeah. That is just collected right in my. Yeah.
I guess it turned to.
Lost all those pictures that day.
Yeah. Somewhere down in Splash Mountain, Brer Rabbit, you know, had our pictures developed. I was looking at him.
He's like, ooh, that Misty's not very photogenic.
Yeah, look at that. She's still pretty, even with water in her face. Look at that.
Oh, yeah, nice. Way to
look at the big fat guy next to her. He sure lucked out.
Oh, stop.
I gotta say, the Jurassic Park reminds me. Also, be careful of your hat on that ride. I've lost two hats on that ride. I used to work at NBC. I got this nice Heroes hat when Heroes was out. It's a beautiful hat. It had like the crew logos on it. I was all, I'm special. Rode on Jurassic Park that afternoon. Whoosh!
Jurassic
right off
Park
my head.
Did that too?
Yep, right
well,
off
see,
my head, right
thing.
In the water.
You know, in Jurassic Park, they also had that little section of the souvenir shop where you get off where you can buy all the other people's hats that have been lost on the ride.
Exactly.
Do you do that?
No, they don't do that, honey.
Dang it.
No, they collect them and then they just keep them in Lost and Found. And then after 30 days, all the people that work at the park take it home.
I went to ask if they could like somehow get it out. They're like, not at this point, it's gone.
Yeah. I wonder what happens. You know, that might make an interesting story.
All these dinosaurs running Lidsville, around
that. The Lidsville remake at the bottom of the Jurassic Park ride.
Oh, yeah, all the hats that are lost at amusement parks. They all come together. You know, all these baseball hats and everything. They're usually the baseball hats that get lost.
Anyway. Yeah, it is because the brim catches the wind. What was your question?
When can we go?
To where? To Lidsville or to Jurassic Park?
Lidsville.
Oh, gee. You know, as soon as I buy a poncho, that's
our tickets just expired. They expired yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the they expired yesterday.
I'll take them tomorrow.
You just know what?
Well, not on the weekend. Maybe Monday or Tuesday.
You know what? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh.
I hope they run out of ponchos.
Oh, Evil. Now, see, why do you want me to suffer and be soaked all day and have swamp ass and squishy shoes?
Yeah.
That's not okay.
Yeah, just go on a mummy ride all day long. That was my favorite.
I love the mummy. I
went
mummy
every
ride.
Lunch at NBC. I'd just ride on the mummy, put on my earbuds, listen to like Buckethead or something, just take the mummy back and forth all over and over.
Absolutely.
Again.
See, London, when the first time I took the two girls, was it last year? 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, to Universal. She had never ridden the mummy or had been freaked out.
I had, but my friend dragged me on it and told me if I didn't shut up, she was going to hit me. And so we go on the ride.
Nice
and
friend.
I'm like, yeah, I know, right? And I'm like crying because I didn't know what was happening. And we go on the ride, and all the things like attack your feet, and I started to cry and scream, and everyone was staring at me.
Yeah, they have this little thing that whips the back of your feet like scarabs are crawling on you.
Yeah, spiders, and it freaked me out the first time, too, because I'm arachnophobic.
Ooh, that's good for you.
Yeah.
You would have liked Calla this morning, had a big old spider crawling on her blanket, and our dog was trying to protect her and eat it. And I was like, you know, no outcome here is good right now.
Yeah.
So I went and got a Kleenex and took him outside, but I was just like, oh.
Those dark rides don't usually scare me that much. What get me
you
are the
love dark rides. You wanted to design that whole website around that dark ride animation.
I know, it's like half
Snow White ride. Yeah.
Oh.
I actually did an intro for a website, which is I was working with an animator on it, where it was like a dark ride through all my characters. So you know, Super Eka and Rashi were there, and Mutant Texas and Jingle Bell and everything.
Like the Snow White ride at Disney. Yeah. You know, like where you go.
Yeah,
through.
I love those. Yeah.
Yeah, I love those too. I mean, I've never gotten frightened on one of those, but it's the upside down roller coasters that do me in. The most terrifying ride prior to that I have ever been on, and I've actually written about this. The most horrific theme park ride was when I was a little kid in Wakefield, Massachusetts, in Boston, Massachusetts. I lived in Boston when I was a little kid. There was a theme park in Wakefield called Pleasure Island.
Mm-hmm.
And they, just as Disneyland was built around sort of like, you know, had sort of an Americana theme going in Main Street and Frontierland, this park in Boston wanted to compete with Disneyland and have a park in the Northeast, which is not a very smart idea considering
it's the weather.
Yeah, you're going to be closed for half a year.
Sure.
So it was open
but
from...
Did you hear that going in the background? That's so awesome.
It was open from about Easter, like say April to October, and then with a week open at Christmas.
Uh-huh.
So they really couldn't make as much money as a Disneyland or Disney World in Florida. So it was open like from 1960 to 1970 or something like that when I was living there when I was a little kid. And the ride I remember that scared the hell out of me was they had like their own Jungle Cruise ride, and it was called the Moby Dick Hunt. And it was a hunt for Moby Dick.
Horrible name.
I know.
Yes.
You have to say it's
a bunch of old cougars on a boat.
Yes, exactly.
No, Moby Dick Hunt. I mean, you say it's...
Whoa.
You have to say it...
You gotta be careful how you
say it. Yeah, it's a family show.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, but there it was written, you know, on the side of the dock.
It's like that magazine Clint.
Depending on where they position the
text.
Yeah,
yes.
Mark Millar knew what he was doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Get your attention. It's
crass. Anyways.
Attention getting statement. Yes.
So
we've got a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old looking at us, very confused. Oh.
That makes
you know what? At our barbecue this weekend, some little boy came up to me and he was all dressed up. And I said, well, you know what? You look very nice. But I liked seeing you in your swimsuit because you were, you know. And I looked at my friend Chelsea and I said, did I just tell a five-year-old kid that he looks better naked? And the kid put his hands on his hips and said, I'm six.
Oh, there you go. So it wasn't.
And Chelsea said, that is the best exchange ever.
As long as it wasn't inappropriate.
I just told a five-year-old he looks better naked. I'm six. All right. There, okay, yeah. So Moby Dick.
Oh, just, you know, they built it in an actual pond, and what it was you got in this boat. There's like an old style whaling boat, and it's like, and there was always some like kid from the neighborhood, you know, from Boston. It's like, hi, I'm Skipper Jeff, and I'm going to take you on a hunt for the great white whale Moby Dick. Skipper Jeff, and we're in the Headhunter waters, and look out there's a rhinoceros. It's charging the boat. And,
look out, there's Moby Dick. Oh, no, that's Moby Duck.
The Moby Duck.
Oh.
No.
Big disappointment. Yeah. Everybody goes home, and they're like, man, when's this close?
But I remember as a little kid getting on the ride, and it's like, we're out in the middle of real water here, because it wasn't just like one of the, you know, the rides, you know, it was actually built in a pond.
Yeah.
You know? Like I think they had widened the pond or made it, but it was actual water, not like the Jungle Cruise where you can tell, okay, it's all paved and everything.
And, yeah.
And what they had done was they had put, they take you around this, you know, little islands and everything. And they had a rhino kind of charge down to the water and, you know, a gorilla in the trees and everything like that. Real hokey stuff. But once you get actually to Moby Dick's lagoon, they had rigged it. And this was really impressive. So a 70-foot whale, white whale.
Is in a lagoon.
Came out of the water. And it looked realistic. It didn't look friendly at all.
Oh,
it had
wow.
teeth and a big rolling eye. And it charged your boat, you know. And I'm sitting there as a four-year-old kid watching this going like, peeing myself. Oh, and Skipper Jeff would go, here, take the harpoon. Harpoon him. You know, it's like, oh, I'm going to kill him. And it's like, no, give me the harpoon back, kid. Come on. You know, I'll save us all. And it's like, no, you can't really stab him. That'll make a hole in the sheet metal on
his
side.
I'll go down as a hero.
You know?
Tell my mother I loved her.
That's right. That's right. And it almost went, you know, it was like that. I wanted to kill that damn whale. And I still... And but it was kind of scary for little kids, you know, the first time seeing it. Then I went back years later, and it's like, oh yeah, there he is. There's the dolphins.
Oh, but you know what's really scary about this is the park closed down, but they never fished the rusty carcass.
He's
out of the
He's still there,
of the pond.
And that's what's really horrifying.
Are you kidding?
Can
me?
You
They're
imagine?
Just like, leave it.
There's that, but can you imagine putting on scuba gear and not knowing?
Yeah.
And going down there, and you've got this flashlight. It's pitch black, totally silent. All you hear is. As your scuba ink, and then your flashlight happens upon this big brown eye, and it's like, oh damn!
Like, well,
oh
that's,
my god!
That you know, there are all sorts of local legends around Wakefield. What happened to Moby Dick? And some people swear they saw him out of water and rusted and broken apart. Others say somebody bought him and hauled him away. Others maintain to their dying day that he is still in there. And the divers have gone down and come up scared to death having encountered.
So how do we find out? How do we put on scuba deer and go scuba deer? Did I just invent a new species?
It's Bambi that's swimming underwater.
Scuba deer, I like that. They breathe through their antlers.
It's like little snorkels.
Yeah.
That's the sound they make, apparently.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
But, so, scuba deer. So,
yeah.
How do we get scuba deer to ride us down underneath
the water?
Oh,
we'll never know. We'll never know. Because I'll never know. I'll never go back there.
What?
Because I know. I know he's there waiting for me. And I know that if I could, even though there's a little office park there and there are little benches around the pond, I know that at some point, if I go back there, he's waiting for me. Just like that. Just like that crocodile in that Rudyard Kipling story.
Yeah.
That years before he tried to get a little boy, and then the boy grows up and is the guy who hunts down the crocodile and kills him. But this will have a different end because I'll stumble.
The Rudyard Kipling, the Undertakers. Right?
The Undertakers,
yeah, yeah.
Rudyard Kipling. I'm going to stumble over some long, you know, ignored or hidden bit of wiring that's going to spark, you know, 40 years later, it's going to send a charge down there, and Moby is going to come up.
you know, rise out all rusting and horrible in one last mighty death throw and spasm and fall on the bank and take me down with him, just like he took down Ahab in the book.
I totally want to see that.
And I'll be sitting beside you, resting on Queequeg's coffin,
yes,
yelling out.
And only Ezra survives. Call me Ezra.
Call me Ezra.
Oh, no.
Only I survive to tell the tale. Gosh. No, he's out there. Moby Dick is my lifelong enemy because of the childhood trauma.
That and pants.
Pants are my enemy.
All's mortal enemy, pants.
And Moby Dick and
pants.
He's
wearing pants.
I can't find a pair that fit.
You find pair that fit you all the time. You just like to complain about pants.
Pants.
Jeez.
My
oh my God, we're almost at time.
Okay,
nothing happened.
This is my rogue. I have the world's most pathetic rogues gallery. I have Moby Dick, pants, shredded lettuce, because it always falls all over me whenever I eat in the car, Kathy Griffin, and that Komodo dragon that tried to kill me.
You know what mine consists of?
What?
Styrofoam peanuts.
That's it. So if you were hanging over a vat of boiling wax, it would be a styrofoam peanut lowering you in there.
Yes, it would.
It wouldn't be the Riddler.
That's his voice.
You know,
I hear it in my nightmares.
You know, you defeat styrofoam peanut. You just static electricity sticks to you, and then you.
Yeah, that's kind of great. Yeah.
Well, that's the end of my rogues gallery.
Yeah.
And that's the end of my 6-series arc. My 6-issue arc ends with static electricity. Right. Saved by Dwayne McDuffie in Static Shock.
There you go.
Exactly.
There we go.
I will miss Dwayne at Comic-Con this year.
Yeah.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. Should we talk a little bit about Comic-Con?
Yeah, we should probably mention Comic-Con real quick.
Yeah, it's Comic-Con.
Oh, my God. It's next week.
It's 2 weeks.
This week.
Two weeks.
Oh, yeah. I don't know two when weeks. This goes
up. Yeah, we're looking at doing a podcast from down there. So if we approach you and stick a microphone in your... in your face. Ezra will be down there spreading the word of Radio Rashi.
Yeah,
and,
if you see me, I don't know how you'll recognize.
What?
Wait,
no.
What? That, people aren't going to like that, especially Emily.
So we'll have some buttons.
So if you've got good antibodies.
We'll have some buttons with the characters.
Yeah, if you know how to find me, if you know what I look like,
he's a handsome
track me down.
Ezra.
I'll have Radio Rashi stuff all over me, but track me down. I'll give you stickers or buttons or whatever.
And he can put things all over you.
And we'll try and get you. We're looking to get celebrities for on-the-spot interviews.
It's getting worse and worse.
So
it really is.
By celebrities, you know, people who've either read or know what a comic book is.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. Jeez.
You know, somebody's got to talk to us.
Yeah. Somebody will talk to us.
I don't think anyone will talk to us.
I don't know.
Let's make it a game and see how many people we can alienate. I'm really good at it.
Well, let's work up a plan for the next podcast, which will air probably the...
The weekend right before.
The weekend right before Comic-Con, mm-hmm. So then we'll put where they can find us and what we're going to do.
That's a good idea.
And that we're going to do that. We will probably leave Hobart at home because of...
Well, because there's undoubtedly a contractor or two that'll still be hanging around.
Yeah.
He has trouble telling between people dressing up in costume and actual animals.
Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Although he probably could put some spandex out of its misery.
Well...
There's some pretty miserable spandex at Comic-Con sometimes.
He keeps cracking molars on a Stormtrooper outfit. So he's learned not to go after Stormtroopers.
Because they have an exoskeleton.
Dressed
like
a Boba.
He needs to
Jango
get some
Fett.
Of those crackers.
Yeah.
So he can break open the Stormtrooper shells.
But there are those guys running around in the giant weasel costumes and the skunk costumes who
That's
run up
Anthrocon.
To, who embrace them as one of their own and then they kind of live to tell about it. They do not live to tell about it.
He does pretty well for himself.
Yeah, he does. Okay, I think we better wrap it up. And oh, wait a minute. Another electrician just pulled up and... there he goes.
Off he went.
Okay. Oh, man. The guy didn't even get outside the door. He's... Okay,
I'm going to go pull him off that guy's driver's seat.
Okay, all right. That's a good idea.
All right, bye, everybody.
Bye.
See you later.
We'll talk to you next week.
Homer, I'll help.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter @RadioRashi or @Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends!
Misty Lee, the game is simple. 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 The hero will take on 10 strangers, one... The hero will take on 10 strangers, one at a time, in a series of head-to-head trivia showdowns. The first person who fails to answer a question correctly within 20 seconds will fall through the floor. If the stranger drops the hero, they will win $10,000. If the hero drops all 10 strangers, they could win $1 million.
Hey, this is Rashi. If you could find our friend Ezra Walker on the floor at Comic-Con, you might be able to get yourself a Monkey Club button. And wouldn't that be cool? It's got my picture on it, got some eyebrows, pretty sexy. Find Ezra!